Hello, everyone, and welcome to Beatsby's Bits and Bobs, episode 36, PR Wars Bitterfront 2. See, I warned you guys that I had a strained title for this episode with the play on words, and now I've got a Picard-esque head in hands from Joel, and just Richard looking sad and like thinking to himself, I'm known for my writing abilities. Like, what is Ben doing to this site with a title for the episode like that?
Just trying to weigh that up. I mean, Jim Sterling's gone with Gamblefront too. I'm leaning that way.
Gamblefront, but I went Bitterfront because everybody's very bitter and it's Battlefront. So I think it's a bit better than Gamblefront. Yeah. So I didn't know Jim Sterling had done it. I think I've outdone Jim there with my creative title in that case. Jim, come to me next time you need a proofread. That's all I'm saying. Got to work on that, bruh. Got to work.
Yeah.
But we'll get into we'll probably spend quite a while on that very shortly. But with me today, I'm your host, Ben, EIC for BXB Games. I've got reviews editor Richard Worrell.
Yo.
And I have home counties editor Joel.
Hello.
And this is a weird one. This is a Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. So I was out late last night seeing Justice League, and I'm feeling like I've got a hangover, but I wasn't drinking. It just must be because I'm old.
You do look mashed. You look absolutely wrecked.
Great. I haven't had a single drink. So that's good to know. That's actually happening today. I'm out tonight, which is why we're not recording tomorrow, because I knew I was going to have a fucking awful hangover. I've got a pre-hangover. Like, what the fuck?
Have you got a Justice League hangover? Is that what you've got?
Yeah, well, I mean, if it's from boredom... I guess that could be it. Like, Jesus, I don't want to spoil it. It literally only came out yesterday. I won't get into plot details. And yet, I will say this, if you know comics at all, or if you've seen a superhero movie before, there's going to be no surprises. It's really obvious. Is it a spoiler to say Superman comes back because he's in all the marketing materials? I don't think it is it? Let's be honest. So Superman comes back. There's that.
He does. That's I mean, that was obvious.
When I said no spoilers, what I meant was big spoilers.
Yeah.
That's how I roll. What can I say? It feels like a film of two halves. You can tell there's a directorial shift. The third act I enjoyed a lot, and it does do quite a bit to redeem the opening. But the opening hour spends so much time trying to do origin stories for all the characters that you just get bored and you want them to get on with the fucking film. And that's the problem with the DC movies, isn't it? I mean, they've not done what Marvel did. They're trying to rush it all through, you know, and skip those films that they very cleverly did to establish the characters so that they could have the big meaty crossovers and really engage in those moments and those bits that everybody wants from the comics. Way too much kind of dodgy CGI as well. Just like a huge reliance on so much CGI. There are times when I don't know if I'm looking at real actors or if they've switched bits of them out. And it just, there's so much uncanny valley going on. I will say this, the film opens, right, with this cell phone shot video of, like, Superman by some kids. Like, Superman's just, like, saved some kids from a burning building. And they've shot him on it on their iPhone. And it was clearly done in post. And Henry Cavill is all CGI'd for this. And it just looks so shit that you're like, how did this get out? Like, I'm interested. If you're going to go see it, Rich, yeah?
Well, I'm not sure now. I'd heard sort of middling opinions on it, but I don't know. The more I'm hearing, the worse it sounds. And it sounds as if they've made a lot of the same mistakes as Suicide Squad, which I absolutely hated. So if it goes into all this character introduction nonsense that killed that film...
It's nowhere near as bad as Suicide Squad. I think it's a much better film than that. That was just so painfully... committee based that no, this is better than that. It's definitely more watchable than that. I'm just curious because I don't know if it was my cinema or if that's how the film's been shot, but it's in a very strange aspect ratio. Oh, Jesus, Joe, chill out, mate.
Sorry,
yeah, fucking hell, man. I mean, I know Justice League's not good, but you don't have to wreck your fucking room, bro. Step it back. It's a very strange aspect ratio. I had like large black bars on both sides of the image. Like it didn't use the full cinema screen, which makes me think it was shot in, you know, like TV aspect ratio rather than anamorphic cinema ratio.
IMAX? Is it an IMAX movie?
I would, it's possible, but I feel like they just wouldn't have bothered. at the same time.
Yeah, they normally, if it's an IMAX film and you just watch it in a standard cinema, they normally crop the top and the bottom off because it's just extra stuff on the screen. So that's interesting.
It just annoyed me because it just felt like I wasn't getting my money's worth. I don't know. Mm. I like it when, you know, a big screen experience should be a big screen experience. So I was curious if you guys see it. You know, when they the nice thing about shooting in that aspect ratio is when you do watch it at home on your 4K TV, it's probably actually going to look better than it looked in the cinema, which is, you know, I don't know. I feel like now TVs have got to the point where they do look genuinely. I was watching films like on my 4K set with HDR, and this looks shit looks better than in the cinema. It really does. Like, why would I bother seeing films in the cinema now? Are you guys there yet? Have you? Poor Richard with his. He's having some issues. We'll segue straight in then. So that's just the, unless you guys have got any questions, let's catch up with Richard and his Xbox One X experiences because he wasn't able to do
our
special podcast last week, which was just me and Joel. So Rich, take us through the trials and tribulations of a new TV and Xbox One X.
Well, it's not so much trials and tribulations. You're making more of it than there was really, but you know, drama for the show and all that. The TV great. No. I got a new TV, 2 days, 3 days before the Xbox One X was due to arrive. When it did arrive, it had a little dent in the box. And I thought, well, that's probably fine. And it was fine until I bought some 4K discs and they didn't work. And I spent a long time trying to work out whether it was the Xbox, whether it was the discs. And swapping out my old Xbox One S, and that seemed to work fine. So yeah, someone's dropped my X in the post somewhere, either game or DPD. So shout out to you guys. Thanks very much. I've just posted the old one back today, but Microsoft, very good service, have already sent me a new one. So I've had that for the past few days.
Oh, so you've already got the new one. And how's that? Is it all good?
Yeah, it's fine. Absolutely fine.
Did they send you a Scorpio edition?
They did. Yeah. They did.
Wow. No, they did real good. They did you a real solid. Did you say, by the way, I write for a video game website and have lots of mine. Yeah. You might want to keep me on the side, guys. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you mentioned that. What choice do they have? So, yeah, pulled that one out. But, yeah, good service from those guys, as usual. They did try it on a little bit and said, oh, yeah, that hardware fault will probably get patched next month.
A Microsoft employer will turn up next month at your door with a screwdriver ready to patch your hardware problem.
Yeah, but yeah, a little bit of badgering, they backed down and as you say, did me a solid, so thank you guys.
They've had some problems with the 4K disc playback, haven't they? The blacks have been really washed out and stuff, but they've just patched that as well, haven't they, with the latest system update, so that should all be all right now, is that right?
I believe there's some disc compatibility problems as well. Certain discs mastered in a certain way specifically. I didn't read the article in full, but yeah, some people are having some issues with discs and that's the issue that will be software patched. I've seen.
I mean, yeah, I got a standalone player with my TV, so I haven't really used the disc much for video playback on the Xbox One X, but just because I don't need to, but I mean, it's a really cool thing to include, isn't it? Because that's one of the things the Pro didn't include. So, you know, that's a tick box. So how are you finding your gaming experiences, Richard? Anything stand out to you from enhanced titles or even just titles that have got a bump in performance? I don't know if you listened to the show me and Joel did last week.
I haven't listened to it yet. No,
of course you haven't, you suck. That's fine. but I went through I've got about 50 enhanced games. So I've been playing so much shit in enhanced, like, see what it's like. I'm just wondering what your takeaway's been.
I haven't got that many. I think I'm maybe 10 or 11 games that are enhanced. Of the lot, I'm probably not in the cool gang to say the most impressed I was with Quantum Break.
Interesting, because I did boot that up and jump into a level, and you can see the 4K resolution bump, but I was kind of disappointed that there was no HDR support.
Is there not HDR support? Because it looks like there is.
Don't think so. I don't think that's one with the HDR, no.
I don't know, because, well, I don't know. It looks great anyway.
Mm. Oh, no, you can, yeah, definitely. Like, Wolf 2 is another one, which has got a huge resolution bump, but no HDR support. And, man, does that look amazing. Like, just fantastic, so.
Yeah, well, I thought Quantum Break especially. I mean, I just loaded it up, and I don't know if anyone's finished the game, but, you know, the old swimming pool levels, where it's all, like, ramshackle, and there's light coming through the rafters and all that. I just thought that looks incredible.
That's a good choice. I mean, I couldn't. I think I picked a level where I was having a gunfight in a parking garage, and I was like, I can't remember why I'm here or what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And this doesn't. It's not really a great example. I couldn't remember how to use any of the powers, so I was just like running around shooting guys, like, I don't know what I'm doing. It's short ass. But no, I think I if I get the time, I definitely want to go back to the beginning of that game and go through it all again because it's really cool. I really like what they did with the TV show stuff in that. It might not be of the highest quality. It might not be the highest production values, but it was so experimental and different, and it's a cool story. Like, it really is.
Stands up. There are TV shows worse than that.
Yes.
Plenty.
Yes.
I think that still stands up. And for a game that's getting on for a couple of years old now, with the enhancements, it looks tip top. That's cutting edge tech there still. And I would want to play that through again, even though I've already done it twice. So, yeah, shout out to anyone that hasn't got that. It's on sale at the minute.
It is on sale.
£15 or something, £16.
Yes, we'll talk about the sale stuff when we get to the news and things, because I know I've taken advantage of some of these amazing deals at the moment. So I think Richard's looking to. I just wanted to mention something else I saw this week as the most ridiculous thing on the internet, which is the Rampage movie trailer. Have you guys seen that?
No.
Right, you know Rampage, the 1980s arcade video game by Midway, I think it was.
Oh God, I forgot they were making it.
Starring Dwayne the Rock Johnson, a giant gorilla, a giant wolf, and a giant crocodile.
Yeah. Wow.
Sounds good.
This is it. you should just watch it, right? And when it comes up from the director of San Andreas, you're just like, yes, that makes a lot of sense. This does look like almost the same film, but instead of like natural disasters, it's giant monsters. But it's Dwayne
Johnson isn't one of the monsters.
But he is, though, isn't he? That's kind of the point. Dwayne is a monster. He is a beast of a man who I love. So, like, it looks fucking ridiculous in the best way possible. Like, I love a good monster movie, and the more ridiculous they are, the better. I almost went to see Geostorm in the cinema because I love bad films. I really enjoy bad films with macho leads. Come on, we must all be the same. We all grew up in that era with Arnie and Sly and those guys and Jean-Claude Van Damme. Don't you just enjoy those kind of films from time to time? The ones that have like no plot, just a dude with a gun.
Yeah, but not all of them are bad, are they? That's the difference. No, I mean...
But would they stand up if they came out today, a lot of them? Probably not.
They stand up because of who's in them. A Schwarzenegger film without Schwarzenegger is no film. You know? Geostorm does not get away with it.
You don't like Jerry B? I quite like him from Olympus Has Fallen and London Has Fallen. I think he does a pretty good job in those. No? Let me just say this, though. The poster for Rampage that I saw is Dwayne in rubble with a grenade launcher. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm in. Day one, I'm there. I'm there. Absolutely. So you put down on your notes, you got your new TV, and I know you had some setup problems with that as well, as the Xbox One X problems. You've had all kinds of technical fun in games, haven't you, Richard? But that's kind of the fun, isn't it? That's what I love about getting new tech. Me and Joel were talking about this last week. We were talking about how much fun it is to come up with creative solutions for problems you don't expect, involving boxes of wires that you've kept for the last 15 years, and your wife constantly moans at you about going, what would you ever need those for? And I'm like, there'll be a time. There will be a time when I will need 46 3.5mm cables. There will come a time, and you will thank me. You will thank me. It's not happened yet, but it will.
I've tried to keep mine quite tidy now my TV's in, but it's not good enough. The wife's got me to commit to doing it all again tomorrow. So that's my job for Sunday. Rewiring the entire entertainment system somehow.
Yeah, but it's kind of a job you enjoy, though. Don't lie to me.
I absolutely hate it.
Do you really? Do you not? You don't get a weird, like nerdy sort of hard on from it, like me and Joel do.
Well, I like it when it is a mess. I like sorting it out, but I have sorted it out. It's all tied off really well, and it's as tidy as it's going to get. But it's still not good enough. I think she imagines it will all just vanish, and just be tidied away into a cupboard or something.
So you didn't get one of those magic TVs like I did, which has like no cables connected to it. So weird. So, like, the Samsung I've got, right, has one tiny little cable that runs down through its like stand, and then it goes to like a massive breakout box, which you then hide, and that's where everything connects to. So there's like no visible cables anywhere.
Well, the TV is not my problem. The TV is fairly tidy. It's just behind it. It's got router, modem, power sockets, all sorts of rubbish.
Yeah. Well, what are you doing? Who's going behind the TV?
Well, no one is, but she looks at it and says, oh, that looks messy. Well, don't look there.
So I'm hanging out behind the TV doing a crossword puzzle, and I'm just like, fuck these cables, man. Fuck them. Like, I don't, yeah. Oh, where? Wives. Can't live with them. Just, I'm leaving it at that. Yeah, so, right. Joel, you didn't put anything down. You've not done anything in 2 weeks, Joel.
Well,
except get ready for a baby that still hasn't arrived.
Yeah, I've been doing that. I replaced all my home networking equipment, so I upgraded from... I previously had these, like, Aorus routers, but I upgraded to this kind of semi-professional equipment now, which lots of fun and tinkering, and it's pretty difficult. It's not difficult to configure. It's just figuring out how to configure it, and I've done all of that, so I've now got... My home network's now separated into two separate networks. I've got the trusted network where I have all my equipment that I trust, and my untrusted network where I have all this Internet of Things stuff that can only get on the internet rather than touch anything else on my local LAN and stuff. So I've had a bit of fun tinkering with that.
That's crazy, for a baby. Man. You went hardcore with that setup, man. That is impressive.
Yeah, it's made a big difference. I get much more sort of consistent, stable bandwidth out of my broadband now than I did before, which I thought I had a pretty solid router before, but yeah, it's made a nice improvement to my wired network.
One thing you were telling me about last week, which I really like the sound of, you were putting all your, you don't like manually switching inputs, so you have all your inputs connected to an auto switcher for your
That's
TV,
correct, yeah.
So that just goes between them. I really like, I'm going to do that. I'm definitely going to do that. I really like that because I'm getting bored of having to do that in my office, constantly switch between the different sources on my TV. But I think that's a really cool idea.
So I bought a little kind of 4K HDMI 2 5 input 1 output box that I've at the moment I've only got the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One connected to it. I had to buy some more HDMI cables, and I went for the cheap Amazon basic ones because they are apparently HDMI 2 compatible, so Amazon say. So I thought I'd give them a try, and I've had those plugged in, and I've just been testing it at the moment because I don't want to start seeing some, you know. The problem you get is that your screen will flash black and then come back because the TV is resynced with the device on the other end again, because it's obviously a bit of clock skew or something's gone off. So yeah, I'm currently just testing it at the moment. I had one instance where it blanked out, but I'm not sure if it hasn't done it again since. So yeah, that's why I haven't completely gone for the whole wiring job yet. That might be tomorrow.
That's really cool. There
you go. Sit down and root it all.
I think we should move on.
Yeah,
because we have a massive topic to get into. And I think, Joel, I'll probably, because you seem to do a lot of the research here. I've been following it, but you kind of like, looks like you really compiled all the info for us. So I'll let you dig through the timeline. So a few weeks back, Shadow of War came out, maybe a month ago. And there was some controversy around the microtransaction system in there and the loot boxes. And we discussed it then. And we also said, didn't we, at the time, this will not be the last time we talk about it this year. This is definitely going to flare up again. This is going to be an ongoing issue. And guess what? Oh, boy, did it around Star Wars Battlefront 2. It's completely gone in crazy. The internet just flipped out. And then EA flipped out. And then Disney might out. And now everyone, like, it's just mental. And we're also going to talk about Star Wars Battlefront 2, which we'll maybe do off the back of this instead of, like, in the normal order we do. But, Joel, do you want to take us through what's happened and what went down with Battlefront 2?
All right, yeah. I've followed the Star Wars Battlefront subreddit since the first game launched, actually. So I've always dipped in and out of it. Anyway, there was a thread in there that somebody posted on Tuesday, I believe. Was that when the special edition got the early access, I believe, wasn't it?
That's right.
And the thread was simply titled, "Seriously, I paid $80 to have Vader locked." So this is a very angry fan who had bought the $80 edition of the game just to find out that from the heroes roster, that classic heroes like Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader, or as they're called, I think they're called epic heroes, are locked by default. Instead, you get Bossock and like some other sort of minor characters that, you know, this is a Star Wars game. You want to play as Vader.
I think calling them minor characters is doing them a little of a disservice there, Joel.
No, but they're not. They're not
certainly
the primary
ones are locked.
Heroes. Yeah.
Chewie's out, Vader's out, the Emperor.
Pads out. I think, yeah.
Layers.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, there's loads.
So, anyway, EA community manager on the thread responded, saying that you know, oh yeah, this is completely intentional. We want you to obviously have a sense of achievement and hard work and grind to unlock these heroes and feel that real sense of reward when you do it. And subsequently, that became just the most. Everyone started downvoting this comment literally, and it's gone. Last time I checked, it was over 660,000 downvotes, and the previous record holder on Reddit for the most downvoted comment only was, I think, 88,000. So this has destroyed that record.
Wow.
So after that, so
can I just is this when they did the maths and came up with the amount of playtime that would be required to unlock Darth Vader or Luke Skywalker at the 60,000 point credit point that they were at originally?
That's the next part is that GameSpot subsequently were quite curious how much money you would have to spend to get the required credits to unlock Darth Vader or Luke Skywalker. So they spent $100 on in-game loot boxes, and they only managed to get about 40% of the required credits. So by their calculations, of spending $100 on loot boxes, it would take $240 worth of loot boxes to get the required amount of credits to unlock Darth Vader. Or if you were to grind out play in-game, it would take you over 40 hours of in-game play to unlock, to earn the required number of credits to unlock Darth Vader by grinding. Subsequently, this then prompted EA to respond by wanting to reduce the cost of the credits. So they reduced it from 40,000 credits down to 15,000, I think. It was a 75% reduction, basically, in the required credits to unlock Darth Vader or Luke Skywalker. It started getting even worse. So people now playing the game started to discover other mechanisms to delay how many credits you could earn. So, for example, if you play the game offline, you can't earn any credits at all. The game has to be online. So even though the game has a single player mode and it has offline sort of local co-op modes and things, if you play those modes, if you play arcade mode and you're not online, when you complete the match, it just comes up with a message that says you cannot earn credits because you are offline. And subsequently, if you play arcade mode whilst you are online, you're limited to the number of credits you can earn in a 24-hour period. So can't remember what the limit is. It's rather low, but you play and you reach the cap, and then you're just presented with a message you cannot earn any more credits until like 14 hours, I think. There's a brilliant video on YouTube, the guy just completing an arcade game and then being presented with the screen saying you can't earn any more credits for another 14 hours. And he's just like, what the fuck? Like, really, you know, disappointed.
Is that a bad thing, though? Is that bad? I mean, the last couple of points you've mentioned, I'm thinking, well, I kind of get that. And I don't want to be an apologist for, you know, evil corporations, but still. The offline thing you can kind of get, can't you?
Well, I think it is though, Richard, and I agree with you when you take them separately, but when you combine them all together, that's the problem we're getting, is that they have made this package seem nuts. It's the opposite of consumer friendly. It's completely, it's awful. I mean, yeah, and then the arcade games, the credits you get are tiny. Like, you compare it to a Conquest match or a Starfighter Assault match or something like that, and you'll get like a considerable amount more credits just for beating one of those matches than you do playing arcade either as well, you know. So it's kind of like, yeah, it's almost redundant, but it's just adding it, it's all just piling on. Yeah, so it's
I think the problem that everyone has is that those are mechanics you expect from a free-to-play game. A game that allows you to play for no cost, but obviously their intent is to try and drive revenue through another means, and it, you know, fair enough. But the fact that you're then paying for a AAA title and then subsequently being greeted with other free-to-play mechanics that are, you know, designed to get money out of you is what's really got everybody really angry about this. Mm. Then after that, so EA's community team agreed to do an Ask Me Anything on Reddit on Wednesday, which, as you can imagine, was an absolute, you know, there wasn't any, people asked questions and there wasn't really any concrete responses. Obviously, the only highlight really was that somebody asked them if they were aware how long it would take to unlock certain things. And they were like, by our calculation, someone said, I think someone was quoting the 40-hour speech, you know, saying it will take us 40 hours to unlock Vader. at which the community manager responded saying, oh, we haven't run the calculation, so we don't know. But then later on responded to another answer that was about how long it took to do things, saying, no, this is ridiculous. It's nothing like what our calculations show. So they're very contradictory, and they played it very neutral and corporate PR safe.
Come on. Of course they have.
They have calculated.
Everything has been tested and tweaked to the umpteenth degree. So, right, we had the AMA, not much came out of that. But then...
Somebody finally ran the maths on if you wanted to unlock everything without buying any loot boxes, it would be 188 days of gameplay time to required to do it. Obviously, with some variance based on your skill, potentially.
I will say some of this maths is bullshit. Like, really, it's too long. But some of the numbers that I'm hearing after playing the game a lot, it's just not right. I mean, because you get like you hit milestones which unlock more credits, you hit levels which unlock more credits. You're getting loads of credits for doing the matches.
You've got definitely got to take them with a pinch of salt.
Because but I think most much. Of them, it's too much.
I think most of them are still derived from sort of the GameSpot spent $100, and obviously what you get from boxes is random. Some people may get better loot, others less, but it's kind of just taking a mean and working it out based on that. And you're right, there'll be other things. So take it with a pinch of salt. But the 188 days is that you've got committed players who play World of Warcraft and have played it for 5 or 6 years and have not invested that much time to this point, to this day in that game. That's 188 days of in-game time is a huge number of time. That's crazy. Next came the announcement in the kind of slight U-turn that EA have temporarily removed microtransactions from the game. So they've disabled the ability to purchase crystals as the in-game currency.
I did see someone moaning about that. So they're like, what? So you're telling me people who've bought stuff already are going to permanently be better than me?
and then subsequently that's turned out to... it appears that Disney have stepped in. So there was a big campaign.
It's a rumor, isn't it? That it's come down from on high. I mean, it's not confirmed.
Yeah. It's not completely confirmed, but that's the rumor. And this has been a lot of the comments on Reddit have been about they've been lots trying to get everybody to tweet, and they want people to tweet with hashtag Disney and hashtag gambling and hashtag Star Wars. So they want to kind of associate those three terms because they want to get, if they can get like Disney and gambling trending in the same thing, that's. Disney do not, they do children's products. They do not want to have the word gambling associated with them. They'll take it very seriously. So I don't know if this is what's prompted Disney's response. The mainstream media have picked up, BBC have covered it, CNN in America have covered it and reached out to Disney and EA for comment and things like this. So it's certainly got a lot of traction.
Let me sum up. Microtransactions have caused a lot of ill will amongst the player base, which has resulted in somewhat of a crusade that's sprung up from Reddit to basically boycott Star Wars Battlefront 2. This has gone international and been picked up by mainstream press, which has resulted in Disney having to get involved. And EA has responded by temporarily disabling the microtransactions. But whatever that means, we'll see.
Is this a watershed moment, do you think?
No. I don't, and I think it's an overreaction on the player's base. I've been playing the game since the day it first went into early access on EA and their subscription, the service they have on Xbox One, so you can play the game early, and that gave me full access to multiplayer for 10 hours. I didn't think it was that egregious, honestly. It didn't bother me that much. I'm a massive Star Wars fan. I wasn't too pissed off about Darth Vader. I guess the wider trend, the big problem is that a lot of these, the things you're getting out of these crates, they can give you massive performance improvements. So it's a pay to win argument, which is what it's coming down to, I think, which is why the players are so upset.
That's the issue.
I think that's the issue. That's more than the heroes being locked. Yes. I think the hero thing, it kind of drew people's attention to it, but the fact that it's a pay-to-win microtransaction model in a AAA game, that seems to be what's pissed people off. However, as somebody who didn't use microtransactions immediately, though I have subsequently tested them a little, I wasn't finding myself at a massive detriment to players who were higher level than me, who have clearly spent money on the game, because you can see their levels, and their levels refer to the amount of cards they have active for that player. and the weapons they have as well can be affected. For example, I know, Rich, you got the Spangly Bangly edition, which gives you early access to higher tier guns with epic card enhancements for them as well. So you get quite a big boost in performance by spending that extra 20 quid. I didn't know,
just in case anyone thinks I'm...
You got it at a deal, didn't you? You got it at a deal, Well, let me admit, right, I'm reviewing this game right now, so this is... So take that as you will. There'll probably be a review up hopefully end of tomorrow, start of next week. And obviously, I'm not going to ignore any of this when I do this review. This will obviously have an impact on where I score it and what I say. And I have subsequently purchased the upgrade to the Spangly Spangly edition, which came out yesterday, so that I could see the actual... Because I've spent a lot of time playing it without that, and now I want to see the effect of that on the game. So I haven't had a chance to try that yet. I'm curious to see if it does give you a massive boost in performance. There have been a couple of reports, I think on Kotaku as well, saying there was a guy who said he did exactly what I've done and said, I massively saw an improvement in my results in the game due to buying the Spangly edition, getting the upgrade to the Elite Trooper pack, I think it is. So we knew this was going to come up again. I feel like what it comes down to is pay to win more than anything. Do we think, like you said, it's a good question. Is this the moment where the industry pivots? But to what? To put in an extra 20 quid on every single game release? How do you do it?
Well,
I think it just means backing off and doing what people are saying in terms of how to implement microtransactions. People are saying, just do Overwatch. Just do it like Overwatch. No one minds that, because it is just all aesthetic unlocks. And people who buy them seem to like them. People who don't care. It doesn't affect them. That is the underlying issue here. Although I'm not... I've played it a little bit. I've not played it a lot yet. And I did get the Spangly edition, so I'm not really aware of whether that's given me a competitive advantage or not. But my feeling is every mode is team-based. So even if there is an element of advantage given to me, it doesn't feel like it's egregious. I'm part of a team, whether I'm winning or losing, and that will be a balanced out team, presumably, with people who have paid more and people who haven't. So I don't know. The impact is probably less severe than you might imagine.
Yep, I can absolutely see that. I mean, it took me quite a while just to get my head around the whole system in this game. It is very strange. Like, literally all the leveling is done out of these loot crates, isn't it?
Did you notice that on the main menu, the first tile on the main menu is literally a video explaining how the star card system actually works in the game?
Yeah, because it's so fucking strange.
It's about a 2 or 3 minute long video that has to try and take you in and explain how the mechanisms and stuff work. So they've obviously realized that what they've implemented isn't quite so, you know, instantly clear and needs explanation.
It really isn't. So basically, right, so you'll be playing as a class. That's, for example, I've been playing the officer class predominantly. I really like how the pistols work, and I really like the way the turrets and the buffs and stuff that they have. And it took me a while because it's things like lock behind star card level 2, lock behind star card level 8. So what do I have to do? So basically, you have to get a certain amount of cards at each sort of tier to bring you up to another level. And each card you get counts as like one thing to help you get up. So, you know, I'm not sure if epics, I think epics and rares have got a higher weighting in that. Yeah. But basically the common cards are one each. So you can get them out of packs, but the other thing you can do is you can craft them using the, what is it called? The currency for crafting, scavenger bits or something like, what is it?
Crafting parts, isn't it?
Is it just crafting parts? Is it?
Yeah.
And then you can use that to basically buy cards. So I was like, right, I have a load of these. So I bought a bunch of cards to inflate my level. I got my guy up to like level 10, and that helped. That unlocked all three card slots, so I could have multiple cards active at once, for example. And then the guns are locked behind class progression. So you need to do like 50 kills, 100 kills, so many ability kills with so many kills, things like that to unlock weapons. So basically their rewards are playing the game. And the only other way you can get guns quicker is through getting the Elite Trooper pack, which gives you, I think it's not the next one, but the third tier of gun for every of the primary classes you get immediately, and an additional add-on for that gun as well. So, you know, that's a pretty, you know, they're not trying to hide what they're doing with that, are they? That is 100% pay this money, you will be better immediately. There's no, because it's the guns, I think, have more of an impact on your abilities in the game than the star cards necessarily do. Star cards are more like modifiers. So they don't necessarily make you better, but they can change the way the game plays for you in different ways. You can change your abilities and for your class and all kinds of things like that. Should we talk about how we're enjoying the game, guys? I mean,
yeah, let's get into that, because it's not just about the, you know, the economy around it. There is a game there as well, which I am enjoying.
Yeah, and it
that's
makes
the,
me.
That's the thing there. You have to dig your way through the economy to find the game. The economy is very much at the forefront of this.
Yeah, to a degree, I do definitely agree with you. When you're outside of the single player, anyway. I'm really feeling sorry for Motive and Criterion, and I think there's another EA developer on this as well, because this game is polished. It looks amazing. It sounds amazing. It's an amazing recreation of the Star Wars universe. It's just as fun as the first game, but the introduction of the classes, I think, makes it that much more compelling and that much more interesting to play. I think the game is actually, it's pretty damn good. Starfighter Assault, for example, is like the you know, when you're with 7 or 8, and you just watch Star Wars, and then you pretend to be an X-Wing pilot. Yeah. That's what Starfighter Assault is. That is literally that fantasy you had when you were a kid of being an X-Wing pilot come to life, or a TIE pilot, or Han Solo, or any of that. It's absolutely amazing, and I fucking love that mode. I've only done about 3 missions of the story so far, and everybody's like, oh, it's... reviews I'm reading. It's so predictable. It's so rote and obvious. I'm like, well, yeah, what... It's Star Wars. Do people forget that Star Wars is for kids? Do people forget that these are films for children? They just happen to have also appealed to adults. I mean, it's.
Do you mean in terms of story or?
Yeah, yeah. In terms of story. In terms of story, yeah, it's fucking obvious. I'm not going to say what happens in the story and spoil it. But if you spend 2 seconds thinking about the character, well, yeah, of course that happens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like.
I'm barely paying attention to it, and I'm about 3 missions in, but yeah, it's obvious what's going to happen.
Yeah,
I'm virtually ignoring it. My problem with the campaign is more structural, and everything feels as if it's been built in a multiplayer map rather than a single player campaign.
It has, hasn't it? So yeah, I had the same feeling. So I completed the campaign last night. I haven't played the multiplayer yet beyond what I did in the beta. I just decided I wanted to go straight for the single player campaign and get that done. I was really looking forward to a good Star Wars tale and, you know, some new characters and that kind of thing. I've been impressed with it visually, but yeah, I think I suffered from the same as you. There's the story, but the levels and are all set in the multiplayer maps principally, and it's a bit, you can imagine how that pretty much plays out. I think it serves as some sort of tutorial material slightly for the multiplayer game for those that go for the single player campaign first.
And it doesn't look good enough for a AAA single player adventure, does it?
Man, you don't think it looks good?
No, it looks good. I think in multiplayer it's astounding, but when you get down to single player experience, you expect a bit more polish, and I don't think it's there.
I think perhaps, like what you were saying, there's not enough specific mechanics and gameplay sort of elements in the single player to make it really stand out as a really impressive shooter campaign, because it feels like what you said, it's more like a retrofitted multiplayer experience.
We've got to this weird point now as well where like full motion video cutscenes actually look like complete dog shit compared to the real game.
Why can't they render them at 4K? This is so easy for them to do as well, and that's what really angers me about it. Or switch to using in-game just doing the cutscenes in-game, because they are rendered in engine. Yeah. And turned into videos because they obviously wanted to hide the loading screens behind them. But Jesus Christ, it looked horrible. Just the amount of blacks looking purple and all this kind of crap and just all the color banding. And I wrote that down because that really pissed me off.
I spent a lot, like you guys, I spent a lot of time playing it on the 4K, you know, in HDR, because holy shit, does that game look amazing in gameplay. But I am going to do some of my review on my 1080p and in the single player, because I want to see how jarring that transition is in standard, as it were, between the cutscenes and the gameplay. I'm guessing it's a lot less jarring, I suspect. So
That really struck me as terrible. I mean, it used to be the thing that video was there to make it look better in narrative scenes.
Yeah, but you say it's terrible, but at the same time, isn't it kind of a little bit awesome that now gameplay is even better than the fucking FMV?
Oh, yeah, in that respect, yes. Yeah. But really, just drop the crutch of full motion video, then do it.
It needs a 4K video patch like Shadow of War got. That's what that's what it really could do.
Either that, or just do them in game and just leave me with a loading screen at the end. I don't mind waiting a bit.
So
with the X, you probably wouldn't have to wait so long anyway.
The loads are a bit better than the previous Battlefront, but it still feels like you're waiting a long time. Not so much between matches in multiplayer, but loading into a multiplayer experience seems to take ages. Like
nowhere near as bad as the first Battlefront.
No, no, it's definitely better, but it's we need to all get online and play some multiplayer together actually at some point, because I'm curious as to how the squad seems to work. Have you guys got your head around how multiplayer the squads work? Because it seems like in every time you die and respawn, you get put in a different squad.
I don't know. Is that because you've not set up your own personal squad, so it just puts you wherever there's a space?
Maybe.
I think it probably tries. It probably puts you in squads with other people as they've died, doesn't it? So that's probably why it shuffles you around. But if I imagine
if we play together, we'll stay together.
Right? Yeah, and you should. I don't know. You should be able to squad spawn. I assume I haven't played in a friend squad.
Yeah, because there's benefits for doing things like killing opponents and working together in the squad. There are actually like power ups and bonuses and buffs that you get from doing that.
There's synergies between the characters, how it passes on there.
Because on the squad screen, you can double your rewards by playing together, doesn't it? Or something like that. So,
yeah, same to that effect. So, have you? So, Joel, you've not done any real multiplayer yet. What about you, Richard?
I've played every mode. I've played every mode enough to win one of each.
Yep.
I feel I've got a good grasp of how it all works. I played quite a lot of the original game as well. So, what grasped me so far is that although the first one was mainly team based, there were sort of solo modes in there, mainly around the heroes. That seems to have gone. Whether it'll come back or not, I don't know, but I appreciate that I'm not forced to perform individually, like having to do that. I'm not good enough anymore. So if I can just hang back within a group in any of these modes and enjoy it, that's great. Kind of what I like about the Battlefront series, that it's what that casual experience you can just drop into. If you like Star Wars and want to be in that world, you can.
Yeah,
and not be too pressured.
I like the pared down multiplayer playlist. So there's only, I think there's only five modes. Yeah. I want to say, you know, you've got your main assault mode. I'm glad it's not just Walker assault now. It means they've given themselves a lot more freedom for different types of engagements. because you could tell when they were getting to the end of the season pass on the previous game that being restricted by giant walkers and stuff on the maps was really hurting creativity and design. So now it's assault mode, 20 on 20 assault mode, which is just like, you know, back and forth different objectives for attack and defense, which is great. So like I mentioned, Starfire assault is just brilliant. Like I love the fact that there are different craft have different abilities now, that there's loads of things you can customize and tweak with them. You've got the hero ships are a bit more varied. There's more options than you had in the first one for that. I just really like that mode a lot. I've been playing a lot of Blast, I think, which is the 8-on-8 smaller team mode. And I seem to perform best in that for some reason. I really enjoy those tighter maps, especially if I get a choke point. I stick my turret down and I just like, fuck up the dudes, which is good fun. It's good, isn't it? Like the game is pretty good. I mean, it's not amazing. It's not like the best, but like the fidelity in the visuals and the sound design, it's like you're in a film, man. It's like the only way I can describe it. It's like you're in the film and it's freaky and brilliant, and like 10-year-old me would have lost his fucking mind.
I know. Can you imagine just growing up with this? It would be insane. Kids that have got this nowadays don't know they're born,
as opposed to like the classic Dark Forces, the games, the Star Wars games of old that you used to love and think looked. I remember when Jedi Knight first came out, Dark Forces 2, and I was blown away at how fantastic Nar Shaddaa looked in the first couple of levels. This game, the environment's like, I spent a bit of a time yesterday just in Endor, just looking at the ground and the trees and the foliage and stuff. They do genuinely look incredible. No doubt about it. The talent at DICE, who do the graphics side of things, as well as the audio and all of that, is just, second to none. It's Frostbite does look really impressive. Produces some real good.
Well, it best do. It was an engine designed for first person shooters and it's now being used by EA and a whole bunch of other shit and causing headaches everywhere it gets introduced. I'm glad they can make a real good looking first person shooter with it. Yeah.
Battlefield 1 looked incredible as well. So,
it's
continuation. It's the tech they've got is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, my review is forthcoming. If you guys haven't got anything else you wanted to add, I'll move us on.
I could probably moan about it all day, but yeah, let's move on.
So other freaky, weird, surprising news, right? Marvel Heroes, which Joel reviewed, that we did some streaming of, that Gazillion really helped us like cover, which we all really enjoyed as a free-to-play character action RPG in the kind of Ultimate Alliance sort of vein. It's done. It's cancelled. It's over. It's getting turned off. It's a server-based game, and by the end of December, pretty much early January, you won't be able to play that game on PC, on console. And how long has it been out on console, Joel? I mean, it's not been long, has it? A few months.
Less than a year, hasn't it? So, I reviewed that in April or May. I think I got something like
just over 6 months, something like 6-8 months. That's shocking to me. I mean, what we don't know everything about what's happened behind the scenes here, but you know, the license that Gazillion had with Marvel for the branding and you know, for all of it, was coming up for renewal, and Marvel/Disney were like, "Nah, good, we're good, bruh, you're done." So there's rumors of that it didn't have a great player base, it wasn't making much in those microtransactions and stuff like that. There's, you know, Joel, you were telling me today there's been some allegations of sexual harassment to the head of Gazillion, is that right?
Yeah, so Gazillion CEO Dave Dorman. I don't know how to pronounce his surname, so I doubt he's listening, so he probably won't care. He's there. It looks like in light of the Harvey Weinstein case. In the Harvey Weinstein case, that obviously allegations are being made against him. Obviously, they're yet to be deemed true or false, so I don't really want to comment much on that. But yeah. And also, alongside that, it does look like the numbers in the game weren't necessarily great. Apparently, just prior to the console launch, the PC game was down to merely 300 or 400 players a day. So those are very low numbers. And obviously, we don't have any numbers yet on the number of console players and things. So they may have been suffering on the sexual harassment may have just been the tip of the iceberg per se, or the last straw that broke the camel's back, because it may have actually had player base problems and revenue problems, and Disney just might wanted to not renew it because they want to give it to someone like EA so they can monetize the shit out of it.
So let's talk about where this leaves the players, the consumers on console, who may have spent literally hundreds of pounds or hundreds of dollars buying character packs and the new characters that they were releasing, that, you know, that some of those packs were expensive, like really expensive packs. And if you were buying them as like an investment, you know, you're looking at, you know, I'm going to be playing this game for years. You know, and then 6-8 months later, you're told, nah, mate, you're done. No refunds. We don't have to give you any money back. Sorry. That's it. I mean, how much does that bite? I mean, my God. Gazillion haven't said what they're going to do yet. I know some players who have had some success, who have made purchases in the last month or so, have been able to get refunds from like Microsoft or possibly Sony as well, although I heard about Microsoft specifically. But, you know, if you at launch that game, you went, all right, right, I'm in. This is awesome. This is the Ultimate Alliance game. I always wanted this game. It's amazing. I'm going to buy all those 5 different packs. I looked at the maths at the time. It was about like 300 quid, something like that, to buy all the characters. You've done that. And then 6 months later, sorry, mate, you're done.
It's a risk in everything we do these days, though. All digital content. You know, we buy a lot of digital games on Xbox Live, and Microsoft may not necessarily be around forever.
But you'd expect that you're going to get more of a tail, that you're going to get a longer warning.
Well,
like than that, surely.
There was no guarantee with the transition from the Xbox 360 to the Xbox One that the Xbox 360 Live compatibility servers would be around forever. You know, so any digital purchases on the 360, you know, they did bring backwards compatibility in later on. And we don't know if that was always their intent, but I agree with you. I think, to be honest, if you'd bought something very recently, I think there should be some sort of sense of entitlement to a refund or some cash back, but there'll be some line that you draw somewhere that is principally, yeah, sorry, mate, you lost out. It's, you know, buy a goods from a physical retailer. The retailer goes out of business. You know, you're high and dry. I suppose you can still use the goods, I guess. But
yeah,
and there have been other instances of digital services that have come and gone, and left people high and dry a bit. Other products that rely on online services that have been taken away and therefore render the product useless. It's Yeah, there sadly,
are,
I think
there are examples. There are examples of companies doing the right thing in those circumstances, though. So, my experience with one particular product on Xbox, with when Xbox One came out, they had that whole fitness thing, didn't they? And they since dropped it because they dropped everything from the initial launch window. But the stuff I bought on that they, no questions asked, automatically refunded when they decided to shutter the service. And still kept it going for another 9 months or so after having given me my money back. So there is a right way of doing these things. If you've taken money in good faith or given money in good faith for a service that's just going to be pulled from under you, the least they can do is respect that and give it a longer tail as
I mean, the difference is, though, I guess you're talking about a massive video game console manufacturer and huge
multi-billion company, isn't it?
Company that can fit that, you know, foot that bill and take that hit. The question here is that, you know, Gazillion, they've just lost a major license. They're not probably going to be super flush. I suspect
they did a round of redundancies about 2 or 3 months ago, didn't they?
Exactly. So they're downsizing as well. So I suspect if there's any form of recompense, it's probably going to come directly from Marvel in some kind of connection with Gazillion or via the platform holders like Xbox or PlayStation. I do hope they do something because, I mean, there's been comments from like the PC gamers, which is like, yeah, I'm sad to hear it, but you know, I had these purchases for 3 years. 4 years. It was around a long time on PC before they ported it to console. But yeah, it's like, you know, but then I got it on console and I've put this money in and now I'm pissed because I've lost, you know, I've only had 6-8 months of gameplay out of these huge investments. And yeah, Joel, you're right. Of course, you know, this is, you buy digital, you take your chances, you know, that's the way it is. It can all go away. But as we progress towards the 2020s and stuff like that, we're kind of expecting more and more that these digital services will last in, if not in perpetuity, you know, they'll have some form of backup or way in which they can continue or at least make good out of the back end. So I think this is a shock and a wake up call possibly to a few people to remind you that, you know, you're just buying a license. Licenses go away.
It's a subscription service, isn't it? It's going back to the old days of Phantasy Star or whatever, where you just pay each month. If they turn it off, it's gone, and all your subs have gone.
It sort of is
because you're paying for this content instead of subscriptions. That's the way the market's gone, isn't it?
I suppose, but you're talking about. I think that what the Avengers pack, for example, was like 30 or 40 quid, 50 quid, maybe more than that, to get like a dozen characters with, you know, different costumes and stuff, which you'd see as a one-off payment. That, you know, it's just the same. The problem here is that it's a server-based game, isn't it? That it's, yeah. if this was a client-based game, if this was sat on my Xbox and I could just play it single player, which really, I don't see why you can't do that with this game, to be honest. Maybe that's how they sort this out. Maybe they put a patch in that lets you play it without having to connect to the server, and you just keep.
Somebody will, if not them.
Definitely for the PC, I expect someone will be able to do that. Yeah. Consoles might be a bit of different kettle of fish.
Well, if they don't care, do they, Gazillion now? If somebody does a third-party thing, they don't give a shit. Why would they care? Marvel would chase on something like that if they cared, but Gazillion probably just wash their hands of it and hopefully stay up, but they probably won't. But anyway, it was a shock to me. I was very surprised because we really enjoyed this game, didn't we, Joel? We really got into it. I know a friend of the site, Mark, flipping went crazy for it, max leveling out half a dozen characters and stuff. I haven't spoken to him about this yet.
He actually put money into it as well. So I'd be curious to get some input from him. Yeah, he purchased a few of the extra characters that he was after.
Ooh. Yeah, we have to talk to him and see what he... Yeah. I hope he knows about it, you know, because he's not quite as following all this stuff like we do. But yeah, so goodbye, Marvel Heroes. We'll keep you updated. When we know more about how they're handling this, we'll let you know. So kind of connected to definitely connected to Battlefront 2's week of pain and suffering, there was this weird case of this guy on Twitter who supposedly worked for EA, and he was talking about how he got loads of death threats because of the Battlefront 2 stuff and how hate mail, and it's come to light that via Jason Schreier and the investigative kind of journalist that works with Taku, I think we talked about him in the last podcast because the article he had written then and also the book he put out as well, which I finished, by the way, and it's very, very good, Joel. You should finish it. He put out, no, this guy's full of shit. He doesn't really work for EA. He's just some dude online pretending he works for a games company and just spouting shit as if it was legit. Weird, huh?
such a weird protracted lie. He's been doing it a long time.
Yeah, it's been like 3 or 4 years. It's almost it's a pathological lying, isn't it, when you do it? He probably believes it all himself now. He probably just found out he isn't an actual EA employee and he's sat at home thinking, what? Like,
But the weirdest thing is, right, some people are a bit strange. Maybe they're not happy with their lives. Maybe they want to live in a fantasy land and pretend they're a superhero. Pretend they're the leader of a multi-billion-dollar company. Pretend they're a king, a queen, something like that. No, this guy pretends he's a QA tester for EA. A QA tester. Like, I think he got promoted to QA lead in his little bit of fantasy.
Wasn't there that's how they caught him out, that in one aspect he was a QA tester, and at some further point a year ago or something, he had cited he worked in a completely different department. It wasn't related to QA testing. It might have been like, yeah, and that was one of the reasons that they started to begin to suspect.
But I just love it. Like, for people that don't know, a QA tester is kind of like the lowest entry level position you can get in the video game industry. You're basically given a segment or an aspect of a game to play for 8 hours a day until you want to kill yourself testing it for bugs. And that's not a fun job, really, for most people. And most people want to get out of QA as soon as they possibly can. And I just think the only reason he would come up with this shit is because it sounds lowly and plausible enough that people would believe him. So really, he was just looking to pull the wool over everybody's eyes because got nothing better to do, I guess. Like, really peculiar shit, man. It's just very, very strange.
Yeah.
But interesting. Interesting.
The saddest thing about it was that I think as the Battlefront 2 kind of, it shifted the narrative a lot on the story of sort of gamers being a bit angered about the sort of pay to win mechanics in Battlefront 2 and shifted it towards gamers send death threats to EA employees and things. So that's kind of what some of the press were picking up on over the actual real issue. And then obviously it all turned out he reached out to the guy to see, you know, he said, you know, the Jason sent Twitter message or stream of them to him, didn't he? Just saying he managed to agree to chat to this guy and then sent him a message saying, you know, here's all my research I've done. I don't think there's conflicting statements here. Do you actually work for EA? Are you a real EA employee? I have my suspicions you may not be. And that was the guy, after pre-arranging to talk to him, just literally cut contact and changed all his Twitter details. So I think we can assume it's true that he doesn't work there, but it's not definitive.
Let me just clarify something. You know, Joe, you brought up that it changed the narrative. People are really sending death threats to developers all the time. Right?
Absolutely.
Whenever something like this happens, right? This is really happening, and it is one of the most disgusting parts of the gaming community. And like I sort of touched upon this Reddit witch hunt, the Reddit kind of crusade that's happened around Battlefront, to, you know, boycotting the game and like you mentioned, Joel, like tweeting at Star Wars, tweeting at Disney, gambling and Battlefront in the same kind of context to try and affect things. Gamers are passionate. I think some of them don't know how to handle like certain elements of the business. It's a business. They don't make games for fun. They make games for money, right? And yeah, you can decide not to buy these games. That's fine. But it doesn't have whatever they do, right? Unless they come around your house and fuck your mum, you don't get to sort of like threaten them with harm. You don't get to death threats. Nobody has the right to do that for any reason. These people are just doing their jobs as best as they fucking can. And 95% of the time, this monetization shit, this comes from the publisher. This isn't DICE or Motive or Criterion or any of the developers deciding on this. This is fucking EA. So like, and even then, you don't go, even if you know the guy at EA who came up with this, you don't threaten his life. He's doing it because he works for a business. And in a business, you need to make money. And that's what he's got to do. You don't get to say, I'm going to come and kill you. You deserve to die or anything like that. It's wrong. You need to get control of yourself.
Yeah, it's an internet-wide issue. And it touches on all subject matters, not just gaming. And it's people feel so safe and comfortable. They think the internet gives them an anonymous, you know, anything they say on the internet is anonymity, I think is the word I'm looking for, kind of thing. So it's just fucked up people. That's it at the end of the day. And they do it, not just in gaming, all other things. Just why the hell are you just sending death threats to people? Like, it's pathetic, truly is. Mm-hmm.
I've not even put on the news, right, any of the sexual harassment stuff that's happening right now. I mean, there's been so much going on with EA and Gazillion and that. I didn't even put it down because, sadly, the sexual harassment stuff, especially within the games industry and stuff like that, it's just something that happens 24/7. 365. It's not something that's just blown up because of Harvey Weinstein. It's going on all the time. I mean, in the last couple of weeks, we had IGN staffers refusing to do work because of the way in which the IGN parent company was dealing with sexual harassment allegations. We've had stuff like this coming out all over the place in every industry, in every facet. And it's really good that these things are talking about. But let's just point this out. The way people react to this stuff online, it's disgusting. People need to understand that nobody deserves to be treated in any workspace, be it a woman, a man, anything, like poorly in these ways. Death threats, sexual harassment, it's grow the fuck up. Get a handle of yourselves. But yeah, let's move on to some nicer news after that PSA from Ben there. So we've got some sales happening right now, guys. It's Black Friday. Have we picked anything up? Because I have bought a bunch of things already on Xbox. So let me tell you what I got for only 50 quid. Or just over, to be honest. Just over. I got the Batman Telltale series, which I'm hoping is going to run better on my Xbox One X. I got Dishonored Death of the Outsider, Joel, because curious about that and seeing how that looks on my X as well. I got Thumper, which looks fantastic enhanced on the X. I got Halo Wars Definitive Edition, just so I could have both the Halo Wars, because Halo, probably never going to play it. I'm gonna lie. And Joel, I got What Remains of Edith Finch. So I'm looking forward to playing it.
No. Definitely do. There's one moment in that game that I think has been one of my highlights in gaming this year. So I'd love to have it. I'd love to be able to talk to someone about it.
Oh, awesome. But yeah, but I wanted to play it because of Game of the Year discussion and stuff like that. And I was also looking forward to seeing if performance is better on the X, because it's got a lot of problems on the Xbox, supposedly, on the S and stuff like that. So hopefully the extra hardware improvements from the new console will prevent the stutteriness that was reported on that. So, Joel, are you putting everything towards waiting for the baby now?
So what have I splurged on? I've only splurged on one thing, actually. I bought Planet Earth 2 on 4K Blu-ray because it was down to 20 quid yesterday. Ooh, that's because I don't actually have any 4K Blu-rays at all. And after Richard pointed out that he had some issues with his Blu-ray drive, I was like, oh, yeah, I better actually test mine. Whilst it's still in the return window. So I purchased those to try out, and that's it so far. I'll be keeping my eye out for some cheap games. There are some there are some PSVR games I'm quite like to get hold of. I noticed that Battlezone's down to 14 quid. I'm quite tempted to pick that up on Amazon.
That's worth it. Pick that up.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. So I'll probably buy that in about 10 minutes time. Well, so I'm just keeping my eyes out for game bargains. The one highlight I noticed is that PSVR is down to, you can get the starter pack now for 250 quid. That's either direct from PlayStation, or I think every retailer's now matched that. And that includes everything except the Move controllers, which I think if you're on the fence about it, 250 quid isn't too bad to jump into it. The only sticky point is if you're going to, how VR affects you with motion sickness and that. So for some people, it'll probably, if you don't react well to VR, it may be a bit of a disappointing purchase. But
that's a great price point. It's down 100.
I was looking at it, guys, but I was kind of bummed about not being able to get the Move controllers with it.
I think game, as long as they we'll get to game in it, but I think they're doing a bundle for 300 with the Move controllers. And I think they may have thrown an extra game in as well.
Is it worth it, even though I don't have a Pro? Sorry.
Richard, I think Richard's the only one who can comment on that, really.
I don't know, because, well, I bought a Pro with my VR, so I've not tried it with anything else.
That's the same problem I have. I bought the Pro and the VR, so I've never tried it on the non-Pro.
That's my concern, yeah.
I think it might be okay, because a lot of the games only a few of the VR games I have, I think, are enhanced for Pro, so...
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, where did you find your 4K Blu-ray deal, Joel?
Amazon.
That's Amazon. Are there a bunch of cheaper ones on there? Because I might...
I actually wanted... I could have got the Lego movie for like a fiver earlier in the week, but I've already got it on Blu-ray, and it's actually only in 2K. It was only filmed and rendered in 2K, whereas Planet Earth 2 is actually, was done in 8K cameras and things like this. So it should be a stellar, stellar showcase for 4K and HDR, basically. So that's why I wanted to go for that.
Fair enough. And Richard, you've got some money burning a hole in your pocket that you want to spend it on Xbox.
I got about 15 quid in game credit. I thought, well, they might not last very long. I'll get that in. And I've got some Xbox credit now. So, yeah, I don't know what to buy on the sale, but maybe Edith Finch is the one.
There's a lot on there. Like, I scrolled through it the other night, just, and it took me ages. Like, just the sheer quantity of deals.
There is loads. There's a load of good stuff on there, but it's all stuff I've already got. Most annoyingly,
like Wolf 2 for £30?
With the season pass as well.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Unbelievable prices, like, on some of these big titles that have literally just come out. ACO, Assassin's Creed Origins is nicely reduced, Richard. I do highly recommend it as a great game and also a showcase for the X. Like, it really, I mean, that's obviously more than £15, but
yeah. I can really wait nice. For that, because that will be about £10.
I think it might hold its value for a while, honestly. It's a very, very, very good game, so but yeah, lots of stuff happening. I mean, Black Friday isn't actually technically until next week, is it? So there will be more
probably next week.
PlayStation haven't done a digital sale yet, so I'm waiting to see if they put anything up, because I always like to try and pick up some of the exclusive titles on PlayStation when they're reduced and stuff like that. One of the games Joel's going to talk about, which I'm really excited to hear about, is the Frozen Wild stuff. So, but we'll get to that shortly. Right then, so the last kind of story we've got in news here, got so much news this week, my God. Gamer in trouble again. Joel, you seem to know a little bit more about this story than me. I, however, lived through and worked at a game during some of the trouble, so I will definitely comment. Joel, what's going on this time?
I didn't pick up on it until you put it in the notes, so then I went and had a quick Google around. And it looks like, so Game have posted a $10 million loss, which was compared to last year where they posted a $1 million profit. So I think Game's just been in trouble generally for quite a long time, haven't they? Mm-hmm. Many years. It's they've gone into and out of administration. I can recall at least once. I think it might be twice in the past 3 or 4 years. So yeah, $10 million loss.
I mean, that's not massive for a huge company, is it? I mean, that's not.
I wonder how much it is quite expected as well, because they have restructured a lot this year. Mears put this big like multiplayer arena thing in the back of it and cut the actual shop front in half. So if they've done that across their network of stores, they must have invested quite a lot of money.
Their statement blamed it on poorer sales of games like Call of Duty World War II and things that they were kind of counting on. So they've had poorer sales of games than expected or forecast, basically, which. Yeah, I don't know. If you read between the lines, you can obviously interpret that a few ways. Are more people buying digital?
Yes.
And is that costing the bricks and mortar?
Yes.
I think it's, unless they evolve, like you say, Richard, unless they change and leverage their sort of actual physical presence more to allow people to try things out that, you know, like, for example, being able to go into game and try a PSVR for an extended amount of time to see if you're going to be sick or not before deciding to purchase one or not would be an advantage that they've got over any.
As long as you're willing to pay for that privilege, of course, John.
Oh yeah, they did do that. But yeah, I think you pointed out perfect, Richard. They sell secondhand phones and sweets and stuff. They have a bit of an identity crisis as well now, don't they? Or what they're trying to do. So go on.
So the arena thing, Rich, is still in trial stage. It's not all the stores. It's like a few of them in key areas. They are trying stuff out, definitely. The pivot to electronics, I walked into my game. Obviously, I bought my exit game in person just because I wanted to, you know, if I had any problems, be able to return it in person. But who knows, might not be able to do that. And I worked a game many years ago, over a decade ago, and they had troubles back then. They've had lots of troubles in the last sort of 4 or 5 years as well. They had that thing where the JD Sports guy now owns like 30% of the company or something ridiculous. Some really weird investors and strange places, you know, and you can sort of see that when you go in and you see Red Bull and sweets and Christmas decorations and pop vinyl. And it's like, where are the games? Where have the games gone? And it's like you've got one little section for Xbox, one little section for PS4. Switch barely has anything in my local one, for example, even though probably hardware sales-wise, the Switch has been the biggest hit of the last sort of year or so. I know anecdotally, talking to my friends there, the X didn't do as well as they hoped. You know, they matched their pre-orders. But I think I talked about it, Joel, at the midnight launch, it was not busy. Mm. Like it wasn't like a queue. Like I remember back in the day working at midnight launches when there'd be queuing up down the street, round the corner, out there for 6-10 hours prior to release and stuff like that. It just isn't happening like that anymore. And I think, yeah, you touched on it. It's digital. It's digital games. I mean, Destiny said, didn't they? Destiny, Bungie came out and went, you know, more than half sold on digital. First time ever, I believe, a game, a major release has sold more than half on a digital platform rather than physical. And that must be hurting them now. I mean, it must be. They've weathered it for years. You know, they've kept on appealing to the mums and the dads and the gift buyers and the less tech savvy and the kids that don't have credit cards and things like that. But the kids are growing up. You know, that's the thing. The kids are growing up and growing into the digital distribution knowledge and understanding and you know, being happy to work with that. You know, we all predominantly have digital, don't we, over the physical games now on this current generation.
Except me.
Exclusively. I don't buy anything physically.
No, I barely do as well.
Yeah. I'm the opposite. I try and buy physical, just for a collector's perspective. I like my shelves.
You're a hoarder. You're a hoarder, Joel. But yeah, I mean, that is a fair market, and there are those people, and that's not a tiny percentage. It's a smaller percentage, but it's not a tiny percentage, you know. But I just wonder how much longer they can go on. They need to do something way more drastic. I like this arena idea. I was talking to the guys at my local one about this. They were talking about how the one I was in had plans for that to happen and should be happening in the new year. And it's kind of pivoting it towards almost like an arcade where you can get hands-on with the latest hardware and the latest games. You book a time slot for you and your friends to come and do it. And then you can have an extended amount of hands-on with a thing, you know, almost like a day, almost like something. You remember when you were kids and you go go-karting, or you go to the local ice hockey rink, or you'd go do something like that. That's kind of almost what it feels like they're trying to kind of move towards with some of their game stores. And
you know what they could, this is a kind of outlandish, crazy idea, but they could kind of get in on the esports scene and become like, you know, have a team. So
like, yeah, and local qualifiers held at the stores and stuff,
and then set up a league across the country where they, and you know, that would, there's plenty of stuff they could do. They need to decide to try something and move a bit away from being dependent on physical game sales, because it's only going to get worse, I figure.
Yep, I agree. I mean, you can't stop progress, guys. I mean, at some point you have to turn into it, surely, instead of trying to hold it back. At some point you've got to just go with it.
They're trying to, aren't they? They're giving more and more shelf space to digital products. So you've got those little codes.
This is the stupidest thing ever, isn't it?
I know. And you just think, well, why would I want to come into the store to pick this up? I can just download it.
So I had about £30 worth of reward credit after my Xbox One X purchase and stuff. And I went in and I bought a £50 digital code. But the thing is that the other thing digital does is it's not just taking away that first time purchase, it's removing the pre-owned system. Because if you're buying digital, you're not able to bring a game back and trade it in, which is where they make their money. Their margins on video games, new video games, are tiny, like single digit percentage margin, right? Profit. Pre-owned, it's like whatever you want it to be, like 20%, 30% markup, easy. You can make an absolute killing on that. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you're taking away those initial sales, you're taking away the trade-in. So it has this double whammy hit on them. You know, so yeah, they've got to do something else. I don't want them to go away. Yeah, I worked at a company it's not always had been great management, but I think it's really cool that video gamers have a destination. You know, we have Game in the US has GameSpot and GameStop, and they have just as many problems over there. GameStop always seems to be hovering around the same kind of like chapter 11 as Game does over here. So you know, it's nice to have that. We've lost HMV for the most part around the country, you know, for films and stuff, because of where digital has taken people and Netflix and things like that. And it'd be a real shame to lose a place for gamers. You know, we don't have arcades anymore. So yeah, I want them to succeed. I want them to keep going. I just don't know in what guise it will be. They'll have to be creative, I think. Yeah. Are we done? Should we move on to,
some reviews?
Some games and stuff, because there's so many games. Right, so we've talked about Star Wars Battlefront 2, so I don't need to dwell on that too much. That was the big one. Would you guys like to hear about another EA game that has microtransactions in it?
Yeah, Ben, I want to hear about this because I listened to a very good 15-minute-long podcast from Austin over at Waypoint Radio. about this game, and I want to hear your opinion.
Well, I'm not Austin. I won't pretend to be as knowledgeable and as erudite as that man. But I aspire.
You try. Go.
I aspire. I drop more F-bombs than Austin does, but there you go. So let's just touch on this. Yes, it has microtransactions. Yes, it has loot boxes. And the kind of the biggest effect that has is that within Need for Speed Payback, the tuning of your cars, which is all about, you know, Need for Speed has always been about tuning culture. The tuning of your cars is done with these cards. And it's weird. It's like, instead of getting, I don't know, you go and buy a new exhaust, you go and buy a new thing for your engine. I don't know the names. Instead of that, you get a card, like a random loot drop card that will affect that element of your vehicle and improve its performance. And like, I'm thinking to myself, people that are into Need for Speed games, a lot of them are into car culture. So obfuscating that whole element into something a Magic the Gathering player would feel more comfortable with seems like a completely bonkers mental sidestep. And the only reason it exists is because you can get the cards out of the loot boxes.
Why do they have to be cards?
Because cards are cool, Richard. Don't you know? Everybody loves collecting cards.
It's just a typo that made it through to the final game. Someone put an extra D in there. It was supposed to be cards. But...
I mean, beyond that, I don't think content is gating in these microtransactions. I don't think you need to buy loot boxes. Put it that way, 100%. You get one of these. I'm trying to remember what they're called now. Like, what are they called? Race cards, something like that. You get one after every race. You get a choice of three random cards and you pick one. So after every single race, you will get one, and that will upgrade an element of your vehicle that you're driving in at that time. So that's really not a problem. The biggest problem with this game is that the wrapper, the story, the characters that I was so excited for after the demo at E3, I thought, oh, this is going to be the Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, it looked good, that.
Yeah, it looked really cool, didn't it? Like, there's a crew and there's a little bit tongue-in-cheek and there's going to be heists. They're just the worst, most awful humans, Richard. I mean, it was like there's an introduction thing where it's like you're doing this initial like race and it comes up with, you know, the slow-mo pause into Tyler and like on the white guy, and then it's like, and then it's the black guy comes and says Mac, and then the white Jess, and it's just like douchebag, 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 and it's like, I don't care about any of you people, you're all the worst. And then it's called Payback, right? And what you're paying back is that so in the very opening part of the game, you're doing this heist with the villain, as it were, but you don't know she's a villain at the time, and you're stealing this Koenigsegg super hyper car, $2 million, whatever, you've heard of Koenigsegg, you know, you're stealing it, and then she double crosses you and she steals it off you after you stole it off another guy, and the other guy confronts you and goes, right, well, you've got a choice, you're either gonna go to prison or you're gonna have to come and work for me. And you're like, oh, I'll work for you then. 6 months later, you've been working for him, and it's like, oh, I'm gonna get, I think it's Naomi, I'm gonna get her back. Yeah. It's like, and this is like, let's fuck over the house, let's really screw up. I'm gonna get the band back together and we're gonna really do get to them, and it's gonna be like, ah. And you're like, dude, what, like, what happened? You had to do a menial, you had to be a chauffeur for 6 months. Like, I'm failing to see the real motivation, the amount of anger and resentment you have, you impotent little prick. I don't understand why you care. Move on with your fucking life. Like, I just, it's so weird. It's like, oh, my family was murdered and I was in prison for 10 years and my friends are all dead. And that, I'd understand Payback for that. But no, I had to be a chauffeur for 6 months, you bitch. So
I didn't expect that. I didn't know it was a revenge story. I thought Payback was reference to the microtransactions.
It would make more sense. It would make more sense, Richard. I might have even cared more. So you've got street races. You've got races. An open world that feels kind of like Horizon 3 Lite. It's perfectly fine. It's just not as pretty or as interesting as that. I mean, it's an interesting thing where I'm playing this game. I think, well, I guess they don't have this type of game on PlayStation already, like we do on Xbox. We've got Forza Horizon, which is easily the best open world racing games that exist right now. Okay, that, like, yeah, without a doubt. But they don't have that on PlayStation, so maybe that's where they're aiming this. Maybe that's where their primary, you know, market. Obviously, it's got the bigger install base. So that maybe makes a bit more sense on that platform. But for me on Xbox, you know, the open world is fine. The driving mechanics are fine, except the handbrake feels weird, and you basically tap the handbrake and you'll pull a 180 without even trying, which is really strange. It's very, takes a bit of getting used to. Every car seems to have nitrous as well, which is odd. Without even putting it in, you just have nitrous. I like the fact that the off-road racing feels different to the street racing. There is a genuine sort of gameplay shift in that. There's drag racing as well. And then there are the heists, where you kind of do multi-facets, like combinations of all these types of race types with sort of car combat, which is reminiscent of Burnout. So, you know, shoving people, you know, into obstacles, into oncoming traffic, you know, fighting cars by hitting them. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but it plays well enough. And then you'll be like stealing something or breaking into somewhere or doing a big showy Hollywood moment. And those are a lot of fun. It's just a shame you kind of have to endure the blandness of so much cookie cutter crap to get to those moments in this kind of somewhat barren open world. And for a driving game, there's not a lot of traffic on any of those roads either, which is weird. Even in like the middle of the city, you know, I guess you want to be able to race, so they just don't populate them with, but everything feels empty. There's no pedestrians either. And it just all feels a bit strange, but it's fine. It's a very middle of the road racing game, you know.
I've got a question for you then, Ben.
So go for it.
What about the progression in the game? So this is one of the complaints I've heard that's been leveraged at it. I've not played the game, so I don't know. This is kind of second, third hand information that you do these races, and then you want to do the next tier of race, but your car's not good enough. So you then have to go and grind like another previous race for 15 or 16 times to get the part to do your car.
Really?
To upgrade, to then carry on. But then not only that, there are five different types of races, so you have to maintain five different cars, a lot of people's complaints are that it's lost its reward. The progression feels too grinding. It doesn't feel rewarding anymore, and therefore people are switching off to it and not wanting to progress.
It's kind of like they've moved Need for Speed a bit from like a very linear experience, which some of the previous games have been, to this sort of almost an open world RPG. So yeah, there is a grinding element. There is an element of going back and competing in races you've always done. And like you said, yeah, each different type of race has a different car that you have to maintain. It's almost like maintaining a different character for different sort of for different uses. And the annoying thing is when you do these heists, they give you bespoke vehicles for them. So it's like your cars aren't even relevant to those big story beats, which is very, it seems odd. There's some disconnect in there. But yeah, the different characters are, for example, Max, the off-road guy. Jess is like the professional driver. She's basically, what's his name from the movie Drive, but a woman. Ryan Gosling, you know, so she's very sort of straight and laconic and serious and bland, I suppose would be best description. And and then she does like the more criminally stuff, whereas Tyler is the racer and he just wants to go out and do it. But yeah, I didn't have massive problems with progression. I guess I'm the kind of person that when I'm playing a game like this, I'm trying to do everything at the level I'm at as I go, I guess. So because I'm doing that, my progression actually felt relatively smooth. I didn't have to do a lot of backtracking to answer your question more directly, Joel. It didn't rear its head too egregiously to me, but I can see where more sort of purist fans of the series might have issue with it because it is a departure. And I think it's the right direction to take Need for Speed. I just think they needed to put a lot more effort into the narrative reasons for doing anything in that game. Because if you're going to have characters and a story, which I think is a great thing about Horizon, because it just says you want to play, don't you, go do it. And that's why it's so much fun, isn't it, Richard, for Horizon? You're in charge, aren't you, of the festival? So you can basically go anywhere, choose any race type at any time in any location in that huge world that you want, and you just do it. There's no bullshit story.
When you're on the way to what you've chosen to do, there'll be something else to do that you thought about doing but you end up doing anyway.
So yeah, if you want to have a story in this game and have it such a strong narrative focus, then it's got to be good, because you're spending so much time with these fucking characters, and then I'm just, every time they speak I want to kill them. So but you know, the driving's all right. So I guess that's the most important thing. It is a racing game, as you know. I can't too hard on the rest of it.
Can't be doing that well though, because that's on sale very quickly as well.
Yeah, but you say that, but it's like I don't necessarily think those that Black Friday sales is reflective of previous sales. I think ACO has done well, Wolf's done well, but they're putting it in there because they want marquee titles, don't they, to draw people into the sale.
Well, they've probably done it because anyone who was going to pre-order the game or was a week one buyer is going to have paid for it by now. So now they're after that second tier of on the fence people, because there are other ways to monetize within the game. You can buy extras, there's the microtransactions and stuff. So maybe they're after that second tier now. Lower the entry price, but try to see if you can hope to make the money from the sort of inbuilt mechanics now.
It's just a shame because it does have those microtransactions and people are like, oh no, it's another EA game with microtransactions. Boycott it, don't buy it. And I'm like, well, it's not the greatest game, but trust me, the microtransactions are not the problem. They really aren't with this game. This is not, other than the whole way it's presenting the tuning element, it doesn't affect progression. It doesn't affect the enjoyment of the driving. It really doesn't. So people just need to pull their heads out of their asses a little bit on that one, I think. I'm just going to knock off. We've got a few things here. So Joel, tell me about the unbelievably beautiful Horizon Zero Dawn Frozen Wilds, in which I saw the fact that they render the grass under the fucking snow. And I just couldn't believe that when I saw that.
What?
It's incredible. It's incredible. Yeah.
This is, I said it to you before, this is when we were talking about the Xbox One X in last week. So this is still the best looking game I have in 4K, Horizon, on my PS4 Pro. It looks stunning, and it looks stunning because of just how well the environments are put together, the level of detail, and that's just that sums it up perfectly. Obviously, it's opened up a new section of the map. There's this new frozen section north, and there's a very angry volcano, and it's driving machines crazy. So it kind of gives you a side plot to the main story from the game, a sort of side arc to go and pursue. And you climb up these mountains, and it's this beautiful frozen world. Everything's covered in snow, and like you say, as you walk through the snow, it depresses and deforms and leaves your footprints. Very similar. I remember getting that first sense of feeling, and I think it was in the second Tomb Raider game, Rise of the Tomb Raider. We start up on the snowy cliffs, and as you're walking through the snow, it's not just drawing footprints on the snow. It's actually, you can see the geometry changing under your feet. Yeah, and it was truly like, wow, that's amazing. But in Horizon, as you do that, you just happen to notice that every now and again, there's sort of grass appears underneath your footprints. You know, there is still grass under this snowy wasteland. And that detailing that they put in this game is... it's just beautiful to look at. I've played around with the photo mode. I don't really know why, I do know why, because it looks stunning, and I want to sort of play around with apertures and things and see how beautiful you can kind of make these screenshots that you can take in it. It's really good fun. As for the game itself, it's just the War Horizon. There's a few new enemies that they've thrown in, slight variants on the current machines. The machines are a bit more angry. Like, do you guys sometimes, I wish games, like, do you know when you ever go back to you go back to a game after a long time of not having played it, and like last time you played it, you mastered it, you were like kicking ass, nothing could stop you, but you load it back up and you're just like, oh my fucking god, what are the buttons? And like, you come up against what was like a sort of middle or weak enemy that you would have had no problems dispatching before, and it just feels hard as nails. Like,
I had exactly the same problem on Horizon when I went back to it to see it in 4K. That game does not have intuitive controls.
No. It could benefit from kind of like, you haven't been on for a while. Would you like to quickly run a tutorial again or something like that? I had the same problem. I went back to Halo 5 Guardians this week on the X to see how that looked. And I loaded it up, and the last time I played it, I was on a legendary playthrough, and I was just like, loaded my save game and just like... getting obliterated by everything cruelly, and I was just like, Jesus Christ, this game is crushingly hard. But anyway, back to Horizon. It's just more Horizon. If you loved it, go back. It's more, there's a nice little side plot. It's I'm enjoying what I've got to so far of the narrative. Again, characters are all there. It's just more Horizon, but it looks incredible. If you have a PS4 Pro and you've got a 4K TV, this is the best experience you can have with it.
The reason I was keeping an eye out for a PS4 Pro / PSVR bundle deal, if you guys spot one, let me know, because I would love to play Horizon on 4K. Oh my God, that looks so good. I was watching a video of this guy just rolling in the snow and the grass sticking up where he's like depressed it and broken the snow over the grass and it's coming up. And I was just like, oh my God, how do you even do that? It's amazing. Like the amount of just design and effort that goes into that. Unbelievable. So talking about a game that's kind of like, I don't know. I don't even know. Design? Is it got design? I was trying to segue off design, but it just left me so fucking cold. Like Mud Runner. Do you guys remember Spin Tires when it came out on PC in like 2014? Do you remember people talking about that?
No.
Spin Tires. No. Spin Tires. Basically, it's a puzzle driving game in which you drive various large, I know the game.
Yeah.
You remember this? Yeah. Large kind of trucks and lorries and heavy haulage vehicles across boggy, muddy, difficult terrain in like an Eastern European / Russian setting. And finally, this port, kind of this port, but kind of more like a console version of the game that's been designed specifically for console, has come out. There's some weird politics behind this where the publisher sort of harangled the rights off the original developer, who's had nothing to do with this console version and will make no money out of it as well, from what I've heard. And the publisher's now putting this Mud Runner, a Spin Tires game, out on consoles. And yeah, it just left me really fucking bored for the most part. Look, the physics modeling in this game is awesome, right? Okay, super well done. It's too well done. Because I'll drive a truck into a puddle and I'll get stuck in the puddle for half an hour. That's not fun. That's incredibly frustrating and boring. It's got a very sort of austere, very serious sort of setting. And the way everything handles is weird because it's not like the camera is like a driving camera. It's offset to the side because you need to be able to see the wheels and see all around the vehicle due to the obstruction. So you have this kind of weird free camera that you can rotate all around the vehicle and stuff. You know, and everything breaks realistically. That's boring, isn't it, Richard? I don't want to do that. Why would I enjoy that? That seems, I hit a rock and my engine stopped and just broke. I was like, oh.
Yeah, sounds like Project Cars 2.
Guess I'll restart that then. But no, this is the thing that really happened to me. One of the, like, the first challenges in the game, I had to drive a semi-articulated truck, so a truck with a cab, to a destination, and then I had to reverse park it into a very specific spot. Simple enough. However, I had to do this over muddy, wet, watery terrain, right? And one of the things that this physics modeling does is that the more you go over the terrain, the worse it becomes because your truck is churning it up, you know, and it's like, if you don't nail this thing first time, an hour and a half later, I was still trying to park this truck. All I was trying to do was reverse a trailer into a space next to a thing with a muddy puddle. An hour and a half later, guys. Literally, there's a day-night cycle in this game, and it started in the morning, it went right through the night, and it came up again in the morning. And I've been trying to park this truck in in-game hours for like 24 hours. I was losing my shit, guys. It's just not fun. It just wasn't fun.
All the other stuff you could be playing instead of this.
I bet exactly.
Not finished Hellblade or any of the other amazing games.
I haven't even bought Hellblade, but yeah, I could be playing more Horizon. I could be more Breath of the Wild. I could be playing more Mario. I could be playing more enhanced Xbox One games. And then, yeah, I'm torturing myself with this. You know, there's a certain type of gamer, the sim gamer, that would love this.
I think that might be me.
That it's like, yeah, except fair play. That it's like incredibly accurate physics modeling, incredibly accurate truck and vehicle handling, absolutely like nails the weather effects and everything like that. It's this really strange Eastern European Russian setting. Everything's really odd and you've got all this strange terminology for the vehicles and everything like that. And I know there are gamers out there. I say this in my review, and you might be one, Joel, in that case, that would love this. But for me, it was fucking torture. It's just like the opposite thing I want to do in any kind of driving experience. I want to get in a car, go fast, hit things, bounce off walls, and just fly around a track at 1,000 miles an hour. I do not want to be reversing a truck for 90 fucking minutes.
I'll tell you what, though, mate. From my experience of a driving lesson yesterday, that kind of video game history does not go over well in real life.
No, fair enough. So no, I can believe that. Did you go to him? Look, I played loads of Forza. I'm gonna fucking kill it, like, mate.
I was doing racing lines around roundabouts and stuff. He's like, mate, it's a roundabout, not a straightabout.
Pass your test first, and then apply your Forza knowledge.
Yeah.
But no, I can see the appeal.
Yeah, Mudrunner looks like. When I think about it, I hope everyone can kind of relate to this. Like, I'm trying to think back. Halo is probably a great example. You have a Warthog or a Scorpion, and there's a path, and it's a long way round, and you don't want to go up it, so you're just determined to just drive up this sort of hill or something. And you're like 5 minutes later, you're still trying to wrestle it up, unwilling to give in because, like, no, I will take my shortcut. Like, even though you could have driven the whole long way round by now. That's what this game makes me think of.
No, because the Halo vehicles have got, like, fun, quirky handling. Oh, yeah, everything in this is just real. It's just real. And it's just like, I'm just going to get stuck spinning. Literally, it's called spin tires because you will get stuck in a puddle and your tires will... And you know you're doing that thing where you're just like, go forward for a bit, then reverse. Go forward for a bit. And you're just trying to jockey it, get a little bit of momentum up so you can just get out of that fucking puddle. And then there's a winch mechanic in this game. So you can, like, hit Y and winch and attach it to a nearby tree or something to pull yourself out because you're just going to need to. Like, some vehicles have winches at both ends, and I was trying to juggle winch tensions and stuff. And, you know, I'm playing it. I'm thinking, okay, I get it. I get this game. It's a puzzle game. It's not a driving game. It's a puzzle game. It's just I'd rather be matching 3 gems, you know, or something like that. I don't... This isn't my kind of puzzle. This is frustrating. The problem is I could see what I needed to do in these situations. I could see exactly what I needed to do and how I needed to do it. However, doing it, actually executing it, that's the frustratingly difficult bit. You know, it's not fun for me. For me, it wasn't fun. And my review reflected that, you know, as it can only do. You can't review it as Sir Joel, in this case, perhaps, who might have loved it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you get hands on, Joel, I'd love to know your opinion.
If I see that cheap, I might buy that because that
it's 35 quid as well.
It's frustratingly funny. Yeah.
But yeah, sure. Mudrunner, spin tires. It's a thing. It's a game, no doubt about it. Joel, you've been playing some more Dungeons 3. I knew this before you put this down because I saw your achievements popping the other night.
Yeah,
I've been on the Xbox.
Putting a bit of. I'm actually really kind of enjoying it. It's a relatively straightforward dungeon simulation game, I guess. It's got elements of Dungeon Keeper. It kind of works on two levels. You have a dungeon underground that you're trying to build an army in. So you've got these little guys who can dig out walls for you. So you can create rooms, and then you build rooms to feed and house your army. But then you've got this. You've got the surface above you, and you will have to send your army out onto the surface to try and you know, run little raids and destroy certain things. So you can earn. So, you know, underground you can earn gold. That's your currency. You can mine gold, and that's how you build certain rooms. But you have to research new things. You don't just need gold. You need what is like evil, basically, and you have to go up into the world and sort of find shrines and things and attack them and take them over to and you can earn evil above the world. So progression starts underground. You then have to go out to earn some evil. You then have to go come back underground a bit to do it. And all this time, people from up above ground are also launching raids on your dungeon. So you have to build traps and have your like a defense army house there. So there's lots of little things to manage. It's quite fun. That's kind of simple and stuff. But the other bit that brings the game together, I'm working through the main campaign, is it's narrated by the guy who did the Stanley Parable. What's his name? Kevin Brighton.
So he's got a great voice.
Yeah, his voice, but also the actual dialogue he's pulling off as well is brilliant. It's very, patronizing and. It's just brilliant. Like certain examples, like, you know, when I'm above ground, I'm controlling this sort of set of units I have, and I'm marching them around, and I just try and go down this path, and it just suddenly stops. And rather than just letting you hit up against an invisible wall, no, it's just the narrator just kicks in and says, "Well, the evil's trying to go off in the wrong direction here, but sadly our game engine can't support a map this big, so you won't be going that way." And they're just brilliant things like this. So it's also got references to things like Lord of the Rings and Dragon Ball Z and other stuff in sort of the story and the narrative and things. And the story is generally very simple, but the way it's delivered is what makes it the speech and the dialogue. So I'm actually really quite enjoying it. It's it's working quite well on the X. I haven't had any problems. I didn't have any problems on the original one either so far. And yeah, I'm just trying to get the main campaign finished. It offers a co-op mode and a skirmish mode as well. I haven't had a chance to try the skirmish mode out yet, so I will get to those before I finally finish off my review. So
it sounds like a game I'd enjoy.
Yeah, it's pretty. You know, it's kind of quite addictive because you can sit in your dungeon and turtle quite a bit before you want to go out and just destroy everything. I quite like that style of gameplay, but it also, the way that you can only turtle so far before you have to go out to be able to unlock the next tier of unit upgrades and increase your army size and that kind of thing, it works quite well. It doesn't allow you necessarily to turtle that the way you traditionally would. You have to go out and get resources and you have to launch raids. I'm liking it.
So, this is a weird. Do you guys remember the 90s PC game Outcast? Either of you?
Yes, I've got some. I never played it, but there was a second one launched recently, wasn't there?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about. So, it's not actually a second one. Outcast was a stunningly beautiful, at the time in the 90s, sort of open world RPG. I believe it was famously used voxels. For its graphics.
It was a LucasArts thing, wasn't it?
I can't remember. Was it LucasArts?
I think so.
I remember playing it. I remember being quite impressed with it in that era. And Outcast Second Contact has just come out on the Xbox One and PS4 and PC recently as well. And what that is it's a remake. It's not a new story or a new experience. It's the same game that was played in the 90s. It's just had a visual overhaul. And let me just stress the word visual. Overhaul visual, because it uses the same sound files as the original game.
Really?
Yes, and you can tell because they all sound like shit, and it's so weird, guys. The game, it's dated as fuck. I mean, it looks quite nice what they've done with the visual upgrade, though it doesn't look like, you know, current gen. It maybe looks like, I don't know, a 360 game or something like that. But some of the environments look quite nice. The characters look okay, I guess. But it's got all of this like incredibly obtuse, overwritten dialogue that is just feels like a game of the 90s on PC, where, you know, the developers like, oh, we have to explain everything. Let's do it in an interesting way. I know, we'll invent an entirely new language for these aliens. So that it's completely confusing and weird with all their own terminology, which you'll have to just sort of work out through context. Though if you play with the subtitles on, it actually explains what a lot of their words are in the subtitles, which is hilarious. Nod to the fact that it's a bad idea. But yeah, the same sound files. And you've got this like incredibly hokey 90s male protagonist who just... The delivery, it just sounds like what it probably was, which was a developer at the studio who did the recording for it, you know? And it's just like every sound file was like, it sounds like a 16K recording. And it just is messy. It's crackly. It's low definition. It's just fucking weird because you've got this game that looks quite modern, sounds like a game, you know, which it is like 25 years ago. And plays like a game of 25 years ago. So the combat mechanics are clunky, imprecise, just trying to aim with your gun and like actually just navigate the environments. Jumping is inaccurate and delayed, which especially is annoying because there's a whole bunch of platforming in this game. So, you know, you it's that jumping where you're like run at a ledge and you have to consciously tell yourself to hit the jump button two beats earlier than you think you should. Because otherwise you'll just fall again and again and again and again and again and again. There's a stealth mechanic in this game as well, which isn't implemented well, which does no on-screen indicators, the stealth. So you just have to eyeball where the dude's looking and hope that his vision cone doesn't include where you're hiding, because you can't really work it out. And it changes seemingly moment to moment, and different environments have different effects on it that aren't indicated in any way. And it's that kind of the combat's that thing, especially early on in the game, where every enemy is a bullet sponge and you can just like put round after round after round into them. And again, they've got no indicators of their own health. So you're just shooting and hoping they'll go down at some point. It's a mess. It's a shame because it's a game, you know, it was really impressive when it came out.
It was at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah, super impressive.
It wasn't LucasArts, by the way. It was Infograms. I've just
got... Okay. But it was like, it was that game that your friends would show to use to show off their computer.
Yeah.
You know, it really was an impressive visual game in its scope, in the amount of mechanics it was using. But it's a game that, you know, 25 years later, guess what? All those mechanics have been refined. Everything has been built upon and improved and evolved.
Yeah.
And all this does is it works kind of as an artifact, you know, from that era. And it works, I guess, as a little bit of nostalgia. But the problem by what they've brought to themselves by updating the visuals and nothing else is that all it does is draw attention to all of its shortcomings.
Mm.
And it's just a real shame. Because you can tell it's like a little studio has done this and it's been a labor of love. And I don't know. I guess they just didn't have the resources to record the dialogue again because there's a lot of talking in this game. And the problem is every time it... And the other... It's not just bad writing or bad technical things. It's like sound levels are off. Like you'll be talking to one guy and he'll be like, "Hey man, my name's I'm just here taking out of it." And then you'll turn around and talk to his friend. "Hey, what's up, man? What's up? What are you doing, buddy?" Like that, and your speakers will blow, and you're like, "What the fuck is wrong with this game?" It's so fucking broken. But I guess I'm gonna do a review for that, but I kind of don't want to because like you can tell they really love it, and it's just I don't want to shit all over your dreams, guys. You've done a thing here, and nobody in their right mind should buy it, but at the same time, why not? I guess it's weird. Weird experience. If you love Outcast, perhaps that's one worth checking out. Probably not, though, to be honest. Joel, you actually played this game, even though I posted about it on Facebook and then completely forgot to download it myself, which is South Park Phone Destroyer. Is it any good?
The game itself's pretty average. You literally have a deck of cards and you kind of drag them in. You know, the cards represent characters or spells and you just drag them onto this little battlefield and you're going along and your characters are chipping away. I haven't come across anything that's particularly challenging. And I did do a PvP match, but I have a deep suspicion that after trying to matchmake me for a while, it just invented somebody and put me up against an AI. Either that or I was playing against someone who wasn't at their phone because it was... incredibly terribly one-sided to me, and I'm terrible normally at multiplayer games, unless I'm not terrible, but you know, I was half expecting to come up against little Timmy who's got nothing else to do all day but play this game, and he's been desperately waiting for someone like me to come along and destroy me online and crush my hopes and dreams. But the thing is, it's all wrapped up brilliantly in a South Park style. You like literally it loads up and it's following on from kind of the Stick of Truth and the Fractured But Whole, where it starts off is like, right, today we're playing Cowboys versus Indians. Oh, Cowboys versus Indians, all sort of wrong, the kids are talking, and it's just like, are we gonna get this new kid involved? He's like, no, I've got this new guy, he spends all his time on his phone. I'm going to call him now. And then like it switches and it shows you like your phone you're being rung by Eric Cartman and you answer. It's like, "Hey, new kid, like, yeah, we need you for this game." Like the way they do that is just brilliant in this. And sort of all the messaging is, it all comes through as like text messages on your phone. So it's as if you're part of this chat group and they're all like bantering with each other. You know, it's got all the kids and stuff there. And yeah, from that perspective, it's brilliant. The actual game underneath it's pretty average. It's you know, definitely a pay to win. They're not a pay to win, but microtransactions / we want you to spend some money. They're always sending you to the shop whenever they get an opportunity to buy card packs to try and upgrade your cards and things like this. So, yeah, you know, it's free. You've got nothing to lose by trying it out. The dialogue I've had so far has been pretty funny, but I imagine it'll get to some point where you just kind of get a bit tired of it.
That's fair enough. So we're coming towards the end of the podcast here, and you may have noticed that Richard hasn't had a lot to say. Poor Richard. You've been so fucking busy, man. Is there anything you wanted to bring up? Anything you wanted to touch upon? You played on the X or anything before we wrap this one up?
I've not played anything else. Honestly, my life is awful at the minute. I'll be working tomorrow as well on Sunday. So yeah, it's not great at the minute. And
working
it's going to get worse.
On the day of rest?
I know.
Blasphemy.
It's getting stupid because I took half a day off on Friday because I've got too many hours up. But all it's meant is the work that I had to do on Friday, I've now got to do tomorrow instead because I can't not do it. So, yeah. No, I've got nothing else in games world to talk about. So, sorry.
That's all right, man. I just felt bad because I just realized me and Joel have been ping ponging for the last sort of 45 minutes, and this is like Joel, put me before Richard there. You've been just sat there silently going, okay. So yeah, I just felt a little bit guilty. Hopefully, you know, well, I know it will get better for you. It's in the new year, isn't it? So
yeah, once we get into end of January, I will be good.
So once I've got this Battlefront 2 done, and once that one's out of the way, that's kind of like the last big game of the year, except I think perhaps for PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which comes out on Xbox in sort of mid-December. But obviously that's not a new title. That's a title that's been on PC, but I'm very excited about it though, guys. We're all going to have to play that. I really want us to play that in squads. That should be hilarious. Maybe yes. Stream that and stuff. That should be a really, really good time. But yeah, Battlefront 2. I've got Lego Marvel Super Heroes 2 to do as well. Which
good luck with that.
No, I mean yes and no. I mean, understandably, your essence because it's a Lego game. Oh, Joel's dropped out. I think.
Am I still here visually?
No,
No. Sorry, that's what I meant. Yeah, you can hear me, but you can't see me. Yeah, I noticed my camera had frozen, so I turned it on and off, and it's not come back. So
it's not amazing. That's okay. Don't worry. It's at the end anyway. But yeah, the reason I'm kind of looking forward to Lego Marvel Super Heroes 2 though is because it's not based on a licensed thing. It's not based on a movie. It's its own crazy comic book story, which means lots of random Marvel characters and stuff like that. So it should be at least a little bit more interesting because of that. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. Playing that next. And also, there will be a review coming of The Sims 4. I'm going to get my wife to help me with that one because she's the Simspert. I played the first game like 20 years ago, sort of. Like longer than that, maybe. When did Sims come out? My God, it's been a while. So that might be an interesting review where we have a conversation about The Sims, me and my lovely wife, because she will be able to talk about it in much more knowledgeable detail than I would, that's for sure. So yeah, I mean, that's, we're kind of coming to the end. So the next thing we're going to be doing, are you guys still up for writing about some enhanced games when you get a minute for the end of the month ish
still good for that
we're going to do something for that then. And then we'll be doing game of the year, I guess, not that long, so you have to start thinking about what games. I'm really going to struggle with that this year, I think, because there's been so many good games. And yet I couldn't tell you what, like, the standout top three were like I could last year immediately.
Mario, Zelda, and Hellblade. Easy.
Oh, I see. You've got the three already. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. I'm really struggling. I'm really torn between so many good ones that they just don't... Like, last year for me, Doom and Inside stood out so, you know, obviously, that I just... I don't know. What about you, Joel? You got something in mind?
Yeah, I've got some in mind, and I do need to go back through my notebook for the year and see what else I've played and things, because there have been, I think there are some standout titles where the whole game is just incredible from start to finish, but I have had some other games that have had some incredibly touching moments in them per se as well. So I think there's bags to discuss, and it's not...
Oh yeah.
I think I've got some clear idea about which will, you know, what's going to be right at the top, but it's all the other ones that are worthy of discussion as well, and why they're not there. That's going to be the interesting part of it.
So that the game of the year, we haven't discussed this yet, but that might be December. That might be January. We'll see how it falls for everybody and stuff like that. But yeah, so that's the end of this episode. Please head over to bxbgames.co.uk for all of our reviews and stuff. And then we're on Facebook as BXB Games. We're at Twitter at BXB Games. We're on YouTube. Guess what? I think that might just be actually BXB. But head over there and sub to us. And, you know, we've got loads of videos and loads of streams and special podcasts and all kinds of weird things on there. You can follow me at DIYE. That's my personal account on Twitter. Richard, where can people find you on Twitter?
Colonel Red on Twitter.
That's pretty good. And Joel, well, now that he doesn't actually have a visual representation, he is just an electronic voice on the internet. That's why he's also not on social media. So you can't find him anywhere.
I'm silent on social media, but I am intending to start doing some streaming soon.
Which you will find on the BXB,
on the BXB Twitch channel, I think we'll start with. So keep an eye out for that. You can see me in action playing terribly at games.
you're talking to me about potentially doing N64 games. Is that right?
I've got a mixed bag. I'll be doing N64, PlayStation. Yeah, Xbox, PC,
anything
that's I can suck into my HDMI port, like literally, I should be able to do.
Cool, man. That should be fun. Look forward to it. I'll shout out the access to that as soon as you're ready to go. So, yeah, that's the end of, was it 36? 36, wasn't it? Yes. The PR Wars Bitterfront 2. I just wanted to remind people of my title because I'm quite proud of that. We'll see you all for episode 37 in about 2 weeks' time. So, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.